We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown, Friday, April 12th. Your host, Jake Burns, Andrew Spade here. We are going to go through a couple different pieces of information that have come out through the Browns, both internally, and then we have some NFL news to have some banter about as well. Andrew, I welcome you in on this lovely Friday. How are you, man?
I'm good. I'm a big fan of watching golf. I know you are, too. Mm-hmm. Masters has kicked off, and the surest sign of spring, Jake, right, that you turn on the TV and it's just the greenest place on earth, and some really beautiful pictures today with some of the, it's been stormy down here in the Southeast yesterday and today. And so they late start and some really beautiful camera angles. So that's kind of where my attention is, even though we're 2 weeks now from the draft. I'm kind of, the next few days will just be in that. And I've got we've talked before about how bad I am at betting on sports. Got sucked into betting a fair amount of money on Scottie Scheffler to win that thing. So
we'll see. Good position to get something positive going there. Yeah, man, the turn of the Masters is really great. And then I have, I haven't even told you this really off air. I got a buddy of mine that got tickets for Friday's PGA Championship down there in just outside of Louisville, Valhalla.
Oh, nice.
So first, I've gone to the Memorial several times. The President's Cup has been here in Columbus, up in Dublin at Memorial. So that's been great. That's been cool, but I've never been to a major. So
yeah, that'll be a fun atmosphere.
Pretty pumped about that, man. So yeah, I mean, I'm definitely into the golf. Yeah, right. It's a little tricky because hotels in that area, we're a little late to the game. So those are a little pricey, as you could imagine. So we're trying to find a little halfway spot there, but that's how it goes. But it should be a fun experience. And I watch it like Augusta and just everything. You just want to get there one time. I just need to go one time. Just got to get in the raffle. Make it happen one time because it's, what is it like, adult Disneyland essentially, like when you're there for these people?
That's what I've heard.
It's so
maybe,
fake.
Hey, Jake, maybe we've got a listener.
Listen, we need, if someone's got a hookup, we'll take whatever we can get, but don't try to sell us your tickets because that would get you in serious trouble with the folks there. So
right,
don't do that. But if you have a way of getting us to the front of a raffle line, we'll take that. So we put the signal out. Speaking of putting the bat signal out, well, that's a hell of a transition, Andrew.
10 out of 10.
The Browns and Nick Chubb struck an agreement on a restructured contract. I think we all expected this to happen. It's not a surprise. And I think the thing I thought, Andrew, is this is great news. Whatever the details are of this situation, which we'll talk about, or whatever. But I didn't want to see a situation happen. And I didn't think it was, but there's a non-zero chance with these things because no matter how good a guy you think Nick is, he's battling for his money, which he deserves. So there's always a non-zero chance that this could have ended ugly, but it doesn't. And I'm happy that he's going to be in Cleveland this year. Don't think it has any ramifications on the following year, but pretty excited that they were able to work something out. And I don't know how you feel about that, if you're relieved or whatever, but I just really wanted to see Nick play in, you know, Browns uniform, at least close to himself, the guy we remember one more time.
Emotion I would use is intrigued because I really didn't think that this was the way this was going to go. They got more cap relief as far as what we've read so far than I was expecting them to. And as you mentioned, I thought that next year would get involved so that they would have a multi-year commitment to the player still. So this means that, you know, there's no extension. Nick Chubb is going to be a free agent next year, which it's understandable given his health. I think that the team obviously is not even close to closing the door on bringing him back. And maybe an extension would make sense later in the season if he's able to get back to full health and get onto the field. But that's the part that I'm the most interested in, is where they sit with Cooper and Chubb, with both of those players going into free agency next year. Curious how they handle that, if they want to try and add anything on before we get to next offseason, or if they want to ride through this season with those two guys and then reevaluate where they're at.
You're right. I expected two things to happen. Something to happen to the guaranteed money that gave them a little more guaranteed, a lesser cap number, lesser maybe upside of bonuses. And then you're right, somehow tying in another year of a guarantee for him to be around the team, right? And you don't get any of that. Now, there are some granular details we're still missing. As was first reported, I think, by Rappaport, was the first one to have this.
That's right.
Jeremy Fowler at ESPN followed it up and said that his cap number will go down. It was originally reported by some folks incorrectly, because this stuff is tricky, man. So someone gets it wrong, it's not the end of the world. You get it cleared up from people who sort of major in this minor stuff here. But originally some people were saying the cap number was different. Now the cap number is 15.85. Now that's down to 6.25. And the deal gives Chubb an opportunity to earn up to $12.2 million in incentives for 2024. Some people think the base number will be around $2 million because of some prorated bonus stuff in there, Andrew. But we'll get those details. Those things will leak out. But what I do notice is a couple things stand out to me. The bonus stuff here tells me that, and I could be wrong, this could be the Browns don't had all the negotiating power and Nick's team just had to kind of take what they were dealt. But it feels like taking 12.2 in incentives, the Browns are probably going to prorate some of, like, if they expect him to be back week 6-7, like prorate some of that to give him realistic numbers to hit. I would hope they'd have to feel good about him hitting some of those numbers, or those numbers being realistic to give him some of that money back. The Browns clearly taking advantage of the idea if he is somehow unable to come back at all, they save a pretty good chunk of money here. So I think on the surface, it tells me that the Browns did pretty well as an organization. And then Nick saying, kind of his side is saying that we think he can hit some of these bonuses. So maybe there's a belief over there that Nick is going to be maybe not on the start of the season schedule, but at least maybe three quarters of the season. But again, I could be reading wrong into that. What do you think?
I agree with that read. And I think it makes sense. A player like Nick Chubb is going to be betting on himself, because he's never, even when he had that pretty horrendous ACL tear in Georgia, it didn't really slow him down. So makes sense to me that he feels like he can get back to being the best back in the league, which is what obviously would be in the best interest of the Browns as well. But it is interesting that the team pushed this really hard. And I think it puts them in a pretty good cap position with this. Finding that much cap money at this point in the offseason is nothing to sneeze at, right? So if they were to also do something with Cooper, they would be in pretty good position against the cap, considering that they got some relief with the Judy extension. And so that, you know, makes you think about the other stuff that they might not have to do, which is namely the Deshaun Watson restructure. Now, everybody, or a lot of people, think that that's only a matter of time, that they'll do it in the beginning of the training camp period. But until it happens, I'm going to continue to have an arched eyebrow about it, I guess, right, is the best way to say it.
Based on our recent history, that means it'll happen tomorrow. But
exactly.
I think the most likely time is over the summer, when the new, you know, post June 1, you get into some of those things, the bookkeeping things. It probably happens then. But who knows, man? Who knows? They might be opening up enough opportunity here that they don't have to go that route. That might be the goal. But I also understand the flip side of that, which it's like you're just going to do it anyway for the most part, to keep things pushed down the line and keep giving yourself an opportunity for your team to get better. But if you're so concerned about your team getting better and there's one thing hindering it, you start to have some internal discussions. I just think that the Browns have an eye on that. They believe in him quite clearly. They're all in. But I think you can also keep an eye on your future and figuring out whatever wiggle room you can find in case things don't go the way you plan A it. So something to consider. Another thing that came out, Andrew, was the NFL altering some of their uniform rules, which is not, you know, this is pretty minor, but I think we're all pretty into this stuff. We always care about what the Browns are going to do. I think there was a photo posted of Juan Thornhill in the all-white uniform throwback that they were wearing with the white helmet and then like a white face mask. It's pretty much set that the white face mask is going to be a big part of things this year. Like, it's going to become their main helmet design, but there are now going to be third helmets allowed, but this isn't until 2025. So I would imagine some of these teams doing redesigns in 24 were petitioning for this and got it passed. But now you can have up to three helmets. The alternate color helmets will be subject to the following requirements. Like, they must obtain an entire new set of alternate colors for all players. Alternate color helmets must be the same make, model, and size. It's just a bunch of nitty gritty details here. Essentially what I've come to understand is, like, you have to have a uniform set to match it, a classic, an alternate, or like a color rush. But that's cool. I mean, I don't know. The NFL should be as open to this stuff as they possibly can without it going crazy. And I think they're getting there now with two up to three helmet designs, as long as they match some of that stuff. I just think that the uniform creativity has been really good for other sports, and I think that they're pushing in the right direction with that stuff. I mean, I don't know how you felt about, like, numbers opening up for positions. Some people hated that. I like it personally. I think guys should be able to wear different numbers without being boxed in to, like, linebackers being in the 50s and all of that stuff. So I'm fine with it, but I know some people didn't like it. But they're just allowing more freedom with that stuff, which I think is ultimately good for a league that punishes players year in and year out. Might as well let them feel good about how they look on the field a little bit.
I agree 100%. I immediately start wondering, what is the third Browns helmet color going to be? Because they obviously, like you said, they've got the all white. They've got the classic orange. It was unclear to me. Would the throwback that they had with the numbers on the side, would that be considered a third helmet?
I think it could be, because it's a different design.
It is different, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Sort of some of that.
But
stuff.
If they were going to, like, break new ground, pioneer a new helmet, what would you want it to be? All brown?
It's a good question. I don't know that a brown helmet would look very good.
I agree. I don't think it would either. So then what is, I mean, it feels like the next obvious thing would be black.
I mean, I guess is, like, a different color face mask option going to change
right. The
entirety of the helmet. Could you have, and I know some people like the gray that they were wearing mm-hmm. in, like, sort of the mid 2000s. I don't know. That's actually a good question to get cleared up from the Brown side. If they do end up going this route, is,
yeah,
you know, if you change a face mask, does that include changing the entirety of the helmet? Because I thought the Brown, I mean, there are times, this is me personally, Andrew, but I like the white helmet with the brown face mask. I like that.
Right.
The contrast. I like the traditional helmet with the white face mask, but I also think there are times that the brown face mask looks okay. So, you know, again, I'm talking about, like, flipping through uniform options in a pregame menu sort of joke here, but that's what you like to do. It's more fun. It's fun to see them wear different things, but
yeah,
they're limited.
Put our buddy Rick this league on this case and figure out what that third helmet should look like.
Right, right. I think the options for the Browns, as we know, are significantly fewer than a lot of other teams, just because of the lack of creativity with the uniforms for so long and the traditional helmet. I mean, when you're wearing a helmet as your main logo design,
right. Right. It kind of hems you in a little bit. But
you're going to put the new dog decal on the side of the
helmet?
I
was about to say, do they try out an alternate helmet that has a logo on it? Either the dog or the elf or something.
I would hate the dog. I've been vocal about that.
Yeah, we both dislike the dog.
Could the elf be fun? The elf has grown on me over the years. I'd like to see a mock-up of what that would look like. Wouldn't hate that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm a little apprehensive about that one.
No, I agree. I'm just... That's the first thing that came to my mind was, well, the Browns struggle to have a second helmet.
I mean, they did.
They just finally hit on this white helmet thing.
Yeah.
So what's the third one going to be?
I wonder if they wear the white helmet with anything other than that white throwback. That's something I'm curious about. If they went, like, in their modern uniform, but they're all white. But maybe that's something they can't do because the alternate helmet ties into the alternate uniform. So, like, you can't just mix, like,
more clarity here too. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't mix your modern uniform with your alternate helmet. Because what I've read here from the NFL site, second and third helmets, known as alternate color helmets, can only be worn with one of the club's authorized optional uniforms, classic, alternate, and or color rush. So my question would then be, it says, in addition, if either alternate color helmet is paired with a classic uniform, the helmet colors and designs must be historically compatible. So the team, like, take the Broncos, who are putting out a new design. The Broncos couldn't wear their classic, what I understand of this, they couldn't wear their classic, like, blue and true blue and orange from the Elway era with the new navy blue helmet. That's how I would understand it. They kind of have to mesh with when the team wore them in the past. That's at least what I would understand from that. But what, I mean, do you think I'm right on that? Or
yeah, that sounds right. I think they're trying to avoid that sort of like disconsonant or where you've got things clashing, which makes sense.
Right. Yeah, it can get a little bit crazy. The other thing that was released was the NFL is doing some very fast helmet guideline stuff, which is great. They're putting out specific offensive and defensive line helmet requirements for what those guys wear. They're doing the same with quarterbacks, and they introduced 8 new position-specific models this year designed to mitigate impacts that are more likely to be sustained by individual positions. So they prohibited 6 helmets that were not banned before the year, including this is one that Deshaun Watson, and you might have wondered like why last year Deshaun Watson went away from that style of helmet if you're like a geek about this stuff. But Rydell's been the most popular helmet brand for years, and they introduced the Revolution helmet, which was like, I think the Revolution helmet came out around the turn of the century. It was a very popular, new-looking, futuristic helmet at the time. I can kind of start to remember some guys in my high school in like 01, 2000, 2001 wearing it. And then I think Peyton Manning wore that type of helmet for a long time. Even Kirk Cousins wore that type of helmet for a long time. So that helmet was slowly phased out. Now that one has been banned, but then they introduced in college for me, Andrew, this is like 2010. They introduced the speed helmet, which was very popular. Like Baker Mayfield wore the speed helmet in college. Deshaun Watson wore it for a while up until last year. Then they put the Revolutions, like I think they call it a speed flex. It has this like diamond pattern on the forehead, which is supposed to help with collision and stuff. That's probably the most popular type of helmet they have out right now that's worn in high schools and all of that stuff across the country. The NFL has banned the speed helmet. And to me, what I started to feel, man, was like this helmet that we're talking about that they just banned was the coolest helmet you could get my senior year of college. Like, we didn't even have them yet. We had one kid that wore one because I think he bought it himself. And, you know, playing D3 ball, you're not getting the nicest stuff, the brand new stuff right away. And I just remember thinking, like, how cool those helmets are. I'm not even going to get to wear one. And now those helmets are banned in the NFL. And it was just like, man, I feel really old. And I put out a tweet about that, and a lot of people have kind of responded sort of saying the same thing, that it was the coolest helmet out, like without a doubt, very futuristic feel to it, but had the traditional, like the Revolution, I'm getting in the weeds here, but like the Revolution had a bunch of weird, like very different than traditional face mask types. So you're seeing your favorite players on TV. Then you start seeing Revolution helmets. You're like, these, it looked different. The speed was kind of cool because it brought back a lot of those looks that people were, you know, those face masks that people were familiar with. And I think a lot of people really loved them. And then the Flex helmets became very popular. The Flex is still there, but the Flex is kind of like, there are 4 different PDFs. You can find this on the NFL website. The Flex is pushed down the list. The most popular one that's going to be all over the field, and people might hate it, but I think it's getting more popular, Andrew, is like Micah Parsons' helmet, which is like, it almost looks fake. Like the face mask looks like something a decade, like two or three decades ago. I think Zeke wore one for a minute. It's a very select few amount of guys wore one, like maybe 30 guys. I'm trying to think of it at the college level. I remember seeing the kid that was at Oklahoma, Dylan Gabriel wore it, but he now is like at Oregon. He's Mr. Transfer at the college level, but it's going to become a more popular helmet because from what I understand, Andrew, the results they're getting on the safety of those helmets are pretty crazy. So long-winded there, but I think the thing that is encouraging to me is that helmet technologies, they're doing like, NFL's doing some competitions on this for companies to prove the you know, the technology is better and better, and they're doing a great job with making the most dangerous part of the sport better. It's going to look futuristic in the next 5 to 10 years in terms of what these helmets start to look like. Like Mahomes' helmet was crazy this last year. A lot of the quarterbacks will be pioneering some of these, but yeah, I'm encouraged about this though, because the helmet tech should be great. It's like, as a society, we're doing great with a lot of different things in tech, and the helmet stuff should be a part of what's saving some of the reputation here, in my opinion. So I'm encouraged that they're getting rid of some of the old stuff for, you know, very position specific, I think is what I'm drawn to.
I have nothing to add. This is the rare area, Jake, where I really don't even have, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about when helmets started to finally change in the NFL, and it felt really weird.
Yeah.
And then they looked worse for a while, and then they finally made one that looked cool. And I think if I can distill what you just said down, it sounds like we're back into another area where, or another era where they're going to work better, but they're not going to look as good.
Yeah. I think I can't think of any other major players. Parsons wore it. I know, like I said, Ezekiel Elliott wore it. Someone's going to message us tomorrow talking about more guys. I know there are more guys that wore it, but it's different. It's very different in like the visor that some guys wear on it. It doesn't have a top bar. How it attaches to the helmet is different than what you're accustomed to seeing. There are a lot of helmets that do look great, and they do look like the old school style too, but they're more advanced tech, like Zenith and Shutt and some of these other companies are doing a really good job with helmets. So there you go. 5 helmets banned, position specific helmets. I know that's why you tune into the show. You got that. And then you get some alternate color helmets, which maybe opens the door for the Browns to be even more fun with that stuff in 2025. I know the white face mask stuff has been out there for a while, but I don't think we've heard anything official from the team still on that. So
no, it seems like the teams don't really mind the uniform stuff leaking.
Just
based on the fact that like the team doesn't leak a word about anything on the transaction side.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've had the experience of them going on a pretty lengthy sort of witch hunt to find out where leaks have come from. So they're obviously as buttoned up as they can be about that stuff. But from a marketing perspective, it seems like they want to kind of like generate buzz. So they like to let this stuff leak out a little bit, but they haven't announced it.
Yeah. They don't mind people talking. The more chatter, the more anticipation, they have no issue with that. So maybe we won't hear anything for a while on that, but it does point in that direction, and especially the Thornhill screen cap thing that we saw. I don't think that's phony in any way. So anyway, let's take a break. We're going to come back from break, and then we're going to do, just like we did on the most recent podcast, we're going to do our guys that we would pound the table for at pick 85 instead of 54. If you missed pick 54's pound the table for guys, go back and check out the most recent pod. You'll find those there. So let's take a break, and then we will be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day. And that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system. All right, Andrew, we're up pick 85. We have opened ourselves up a little bit more here. So we're, in the link to this pod, you'll find the consensus big board, in the description. So you can go to that link and follow along with what we're talking about. But we decided to open it up to around pick 70. Player 70 is an available option, all the way down to like 140, because the Browns don't pick again for a long time. So at this point, you are going to have a more broad range of guys that you believe in. So pick 85 is a lot of names, and we narrowed it down to three. So Andrew, you go ahead with your first one.
Yeah, we kind of talked about, like, it feels for the Browns' third-round pick that there's some guys that right now are being said that they're going to go mid-second round that would still be available. And I think because it's just that type of draft where beauty really is in the eye of the beholder for a lot of these players. So I expect there to be some players that fall, quote-unquote fall, that were never really going to go as high as they were being talked about. Whether or not those are the players that we're talking about, I think, is a different question. My first guy, I think, definitely is gone by 85, but I didn't get a chance to talk about him at 54, and I think he's in play at both, Jake, because I think I could see them being in love with this player. So this is Rook Arororo. So that's Dane has helped us out with that. It's Arororo. So it's kind of a Scooby situation.
I got to admit, that's an awful... That's really tough. It's going to be hard. He's going to need a good nickname.
Yeah.
Roro?
Well, you just call him Rook.
Yeah. It's going to need to be shortened.
It's just going to be Rook. Yeah. Yep. But he is an incredibly athletic player. He's 6'4", 294. He's 22 and a half years old. So definitely within the age guardrails for the third round, possibly even for the second round. I think maybe even definitely for the second round. Out of Clemson. A pretty productive player over his time there. 12 sacks as a defensive tackle is really nothing to sneeze at in my mind. And he lit up the combine, 4.89, 40. His 10-yard split was really good. His short shuttle and three cone were also really good, 4.5 on short shuttle, 7.39 on the three cone, which, I mean, I know I'm just spitting numbers out there, but his relative athletic score is in the nines. He's a very impressive athlete. We know the Browns love an athlete. He was a 3-year starter at Clemson as well. So he has the mix of production, or I should say the combination of production and athleticism that you don't really see in second round prospects that often. So I'm describing him as a second round prospect. You know, we're using the consensus big board from the NFL mock draft database. They've got him at 70. Dane Brugler's got him at 51 overall. So, you know, he's not a top of the second round guy, but he is a second round guy for Dane. So that's kind of my guy. And I think, like I said, I could see him being their guy at 54. And we know that the defensive tackle room is full, but if you land a guy like that, you make room. It's as simple as that.
Yep. Love Rook. I think he'd be a great fit for them. 85 would be a slam dunk. We're going to talk real quick. I mean, I don't have to spend long wind on this because we've talked about him before, but Karan Amagadeji, who's, out of Yale, if the Browns don't take a tackle, it's going to be options at 54 to take one. If they don't, there's just such an easy connection here, Andrew. Like, it doesn't even seem challenging. The only thing I find to be a little challenging is that he didn't work out, which is concerning. But the tape that I have seen, I think it's a lot of the tools that people are going to, especially, you know, I think the Browns are going to really covet some of the tools. I mean, again, you're talking 6'5", 323. I think the length is appealing at 36. and an eighth on the arms, 85 and a half wingspan. I mean, he moves so well. I mean, I think he projects early as a moldable piece, and that's okay at pick 85, but the technical stuff that can get worked out with the right coaching. But when you work up to the physical ingredients that I think he brings from a speed factor, you can work the power, the technical stuff as you're patient with him. And like the Browns, again, are in a perfect spot to develop a guy and not rush a guy like this onto the field. Take your time with him and give him a chance to get better. The hands are, I think, better than people give him credit for. He resets fairly well. I think he's can a pretty solid ability to sink the hips. And I also think he's like a little bit stronger than people give him credit for too. But also, you know, I'm not trying to give he goes to Yale, he's smart, but he understands some of the small things that an offensive lineman need to understand, right? How guys are going to counter if they don't get their initial move right, how linebackers are moving off of how their defensive linemen are moving in front of them. He's always in the right spot. Now, your competition concerns are valid, right? And he didn't work out. Valid stuff. But I like that he's got guard experience. He's got left tackle experience for two straight years. I think he's a good football player. I'm imagining they like him having brought him in. And I do think that as far as finding a developmental piece in the similar mold to DeJuan, but you have to throw him onto the field or you don't. Even if you don't, I think that his pathway fits a lot. So I would believe that that player is a good player to take at that spot. I have no issues with taking Cron, and I would feel good about around like tackles in that range. I mean, Dane has him graded as a third round guy. Right in front of him is Blake Fisher for Dane. I'd be fine with that. Roger Rosengarten from Washington, I think I'd be fine with that one too. But after, you know, you're talking about the Browns kind of toward the end of that third round after Cron, like it gets dicey. So I feel like that's a spot where I would feel pretty good about a tackle. And I think that really, if you're putting odds on that position and 85, Andrew, is probably pretty damn high.
I agree. I think the more I look at it, it feels to me like tackle wide receiver in some combination, 54 and 85 is probably the prohibitive favorite. Now, does that play out that way? I just got done talking about a defensive tackle. So obviously it's not bulletproof, but I do think that whether it's Suamataya at 54 and then they come back for a wide receiver at 85, or there's a wide receiver they really like at 54 and then they're able to grab Amagaji at 85, either way, that combo makes sense to me. And I think Amagaji is the guy at 85 if they go wide receiver or anything else really at 54, because I think they really do want a day two tackle. That's my feeling of the whole situation, and he, you know, he and Suamataya are the two guys for me in the second and third round that you could get really excited about. So
couldn't agree more. I like him a lot. Coming out with one of those two would be pretty good outcome. But like Blake Fisher would be good too. Like there's some good options.
Well, and they have the benefit of, you know, we've talked about this a bunch. They have the benefit of that player not really hopefully needing to play in 2024. Now you could find them some snaps as a sixth offensive lineman, mm-hmm. or maybe you rotate them at different times. Maybe they find their way onto the field because Jed Wills is just not it, right? I mean, it's all possible, but right. you have other guys that can fill in. You're not penciling that player in as a starter day one, the day after the draft, which is a luxury. And none of these players, they have strengths, but they also have weaknesses and they need some time.
It's a fine line you're walking there, because you don't like drafting guys, so you tell yourself, oh, that guy can't find the field. But like you're really trying to, the Browns are in a unique position with tackle. It's okay to not have to force a guy on the field, but he also has enough talent that you believe he can find the field in a meaningful way. So there, I think there's just a nice little fold there between Rosengarten, Fisher, and Amagaji that like tell you that's a kind of decent pathway for them to walk. So good stuff. All right, what's your next one, Andrew?
All right, so I'm going to cheat a little bit because these guys are basically right in the same spot rankings-wise for Dane Brugler. They're similar here on the mock draft consensus big board. Tez Walker is 74. Malik Washington is 96. For Dane, it's Tez is Tez is 93. I'm sorry. Yeah, Tez is 93 and Malik Washington is 90. So these are the two receivers I can't choose. Maybe you want to choose for me. They're two totally different players, right? But my question is, do the Browns feel like they need a slot player? With the trade for Judy, the fact that Amari Cooper can sometimes go in there, they probably don't feel like they need that player, right? But Malik Washington is a really, really good one, and I think would add some run after the catch ability that they don't have currently. And then Tez Walker is the sort of prototypical deep ball threat that they've been chasing ever since Anthony Schwartz on the outside. So I guess talking it out on the pod here makes me think I'm going to go Tez Walker because I think he fills more of a need for what the Browns
You love have. Some speed, Andrew. You love yeah. some speed.
That's right. Yeah.
Love it.
And you know, you just look at what he did when he finally got that waiver to go play North Carolina. Like it was the second month of the season and he finally got the waiver and he was everywhere and he changed their offense. So I know that's North Carolina. It's not the NFL, but he was playing with a guy that's going to be drafted in the top three picks. So I really like Tez Walker. Obviously, you know, he was at Kent State for a while. He transferred around a bunch, but it's not that he was, I think, ever like a troublemaker. It was just, he had trouble finding his fit. There was some family health issues. I mean, he's not going to be the like nuanced route runner, but with Judy and Cooper, you don't really need your third guy to be a nuanced route runner. You can kind of just have him be the go get the ball guy.
Yeah. Put your foot in the ground at 10 yards and then climb vertical. All right. How's that sound, buddy? I get it. It'd be fine. I mean, at 85, you're talking fringe top 100 picks. You're not like rolling your eyes at those, but they need to be really good at one thing. That's the important part. You miss that sometimes.
He's so good at tracking the ball.
Yeah, do the one thing. Can you run? Can you run away from people? Can we give you a shot downfield? All right. Can you track it a little bit? All right. He's really good at that.
But if they draft Malik Washington and they say they want to have like a guy who can really play out of the slot so they can play maybe with four wides a fair amount and have Judy and Washington both working out of the slot, I'm not going to be like mad about that either because I think Washington is very much a skill set that they don't have. And it's kind of why we talked about Malachi Corley on the previous show.
Couldn't agree more. So many flavors to go with a wide receiver. I just want to hear why they took the guy they did. I'm putting Jonah Ellis in this group. It's hard to figure out the value of this young man. He's only 21. He just turned 21 like a week ago. It's an exceptional season at Utah. Like 12 sacks, first-team All-American, consensus first-team All-American. And he even missed the final three games. Had a bit of a shoulder issue. He didn't participate in the combine because of a shoulder. He did a limited pro day stuff where he was like he had a 38-inch vertical, Andrew, and a 10-foot broad at 6'2", 245. And then he ran a 3-cone at 6'6", 9. Like, that's bananas. Some of this stuff is like, I look at it and I think that this is a guy who's going in the like early 50s. But maybe there's enough injury concern. Maybe there's enough he hasn't proved enough. He only really had a really effective 23 season. But I don't know, man. The way he can get upfield, I understand that those that break it down, and I think Dane has him as like a third round grade, which is kind of what we're talking about here, right? That there's some concern about can he win in multiple ways. He's a burst motor guy. I want those guys. I want speed guys. Like, this is a really shallow edge group, and if I can get a guy who can win with speed, we'll work with him to figure out power and some counters and stuff, and maybe he's not the greatest run defender. But wouldn't it be nice if you take Myles Garrett off the field 10 snaps to get 10 really good pass rush snaps from this type of guy? I just think Jonah Ellis, man, if he's there at 85, I like Alex Wright. I'm willing to give Isaiah McGuire more time, but I want to continue to add an edge. Like, if the right player's there meshing, he falls down the board. I'm certainly in agreement with you that like wide receiver tackle is the odds-on favorite here. But if Ellis is there, that's hard to pass on. Age, athletic ability, production in his final season, big conference type. Just saying, man, I watched some tape of him, and I know we wrote those things up throughout the season. He was a couple of my write-ups. Like, that guy can play. So if he's there, I pound the table for him. I think he's good enough to find a rotational role early, and then you keep develop. He's 21. Keep developing the young man, and you know take the speed skill set. Have Miles put him under his wing. Teach him everything he knows about converting speed to power. Let's cook, man. This guy could get so much better too. Get him up to 260 by the time he's in his third year. You got something. So I'd be interested in Ellis, man.
Absolutely. We've talked about it a lot that the edge group does not have a lot of high-end talent like first-round guys. It has a lot of interesting athletic projects. And whether that's Ellis or somebody later, I love the idea of the Browns adding somebody to that room that can sort of just show up for, like you said, 5-10 snaps a game and just be like shot out of a cannon. They didn't really have that in their depth last year because
no they didn't.
Alex Wright provides a great size element, right, as your strong side base, and he is athletic for his size, but he is not disruptive athletic. He's not Tack McKinley athletic where he's tearing all around the edge, and Isaiah McGuire is not that player either. So no. And they don't really have anybody practice squad wise, anybody in the depth that's kind of just a track athlete who happens to weigh 260 pounds. And I like the idea of that as a complement to Myles Garrett, because I think it's really in line with what Schwartz wants too, right? Which is you want to see pass rush coming from everybody, not just your starters.
You know, I agree. And that's why I'm interested. There's a couple others there that would be interesting to me, but Ellis is like the one of the few where it's like, I cannot believe he slipped this far. And again, you're talking about hamstring, shoulder, labrum issues. There's a possibility, but he's so young. I have a hard time seeing him get to 85, but never know with these drafts. We say it every year. All right, last guy, Andrew.
All right, so my last guy, I have really, people that listen to a lot of what we do know that I've really warmed on the idea of taking a tight end at some point. I don't like Jatavion Sanders. I don't see that fit for the Browns in the, you know, I think that would have to be the second round. The only tight end that I would be comfortable with them taking in the day two area would be Ben Sinnott from Kansas State. And that the thinking there is essentially he's still quite young. He's not even 22 yet. And he's got a pretty good frame on him. He's not the smallest guy. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the smallest guy. He was very productive for Kansas State for a college tight end. I mean, you got to grade this stuff on a curve, but he, you know, scoring 10 touchdowns, 82 catches throughout his career. I liked his combine, you know, 4.68, I think is playable at 250. So I just like the player. And then there's the like really solid catching the football, knows where to be lined up as a tight end or as an H-back, you know, which I think is interesting with that Giovanni Ricci signing. I just have this suspicion that the Browns are going to want guys that can move because I think they're going to be really annoying with motion. I think all these college guys, the hires they made, I really think the Browns are going to be. They were near the bottom of the league last year in motion rate. I think they're going to be near the top. And I think they're going to really try and piss teams off by moving players around. And one of the ways you can do that with your tight ends is if they can play multiple spots, because then you can have them lined up in the backfield and throw them out wide, or you can have them in the slot and then bring them in lined. So that stuff plays with box counts. It plays with defensive formations. I think that's what the Browns are going to major in this year. Ricci is that kind of player. Sinnott is like a plus or a bonus Giovanni Ricci, right? Like that's what he projects as. I think he'll get there. So I would be excited with him as 85. There's other guys I'll talk about when we go into day three. I think it makes more sense from a value perspective maybe to go into day three for that need. But I wanted to mention the name because if they are dead set on changing their offense in this way, he's the guy, I think, in day two that they can do that with.
Would love him. I think everything about how he plays the game matches with Kevin Stefanski. And then I think, you know, add the other elements that I think some of these other coaches are going to like too. I'd be more than happy with Sinnott there, man, flat out. So the last guy I'm going to say is Javon Baker, not a very well-known wide receiver. He's probably Andrew. This is strange, man. Like Dane has him as his 20th guy, and that's a fourth round grade. Here's the tricky part. The Browns have a fourth round pick. So if you love him and some of the other things have not meshed at 85, you don't get a call, or you do move back 10 picks. He's such a good fit. I really believe that. 2 years at Alabama, transferred out of Alabama, a little over 6'1", 202, just turned 22 in February, so he's going to play the entire year at 22. That's fine for the age guardrail stuff, but like, productive, man. Two straight years of over 50 catches. What I really like, Andrew, is that he had 56 for 796 and five touchdowns in 22. In 23, he had four fewer catches, but he went for like 1,140 yards, seven touchdowns. He went up to 22 yards per catch, can get down the field, run it down. He's not huge, right? He's pretty good size, not huge. And he's a 4.5, 4.40 guy, so he's not blowing you away that way. But I think that like the 10-yard split's good enough. His box jump and vertical were pretty strong for the explosion metrics, 37 and 10 feet. So like that stuff's good. And what I see that people knock him on, some inefficiencies on routes, in and out of breaks, little technical pieces of the game, are things that I think the Browns can help him with, especially the leadership in that wide receiver room. Like watching, studying, asking questions to Amari, right? Which is what a lot of these guys are doing. That speaks to what Amari's worth is here. And even Elijah Moore, who's not the biggest guy in the world and certainly didn't produce a ton, but he knows how to get open. He knows how to be technical from a route running standpoint, especially outside. I just view him as a really fun wild card to take at Z that could have upside to be a starter for you over time. And if I'm getting a wide receiver at 95 and 85, whatever, I just want a guy that I think has enough upside to start. And I think that he has enough things, like the way he run, like the way he plays the position, that if they just get a little push in the right direction, some refinement, he does so many natural things well that I really think that, like, you look at some of the underlying data for him was so encouraging this past year. I see a guy who can be like a Gabe Davis type. Like, I mean, I know that's easy to say because he's a UCF comp here, but like, I think he could be that type of player where he's able to find and carve out a nice role. And then is a guy that you're considering keeping on a second contract because he's been productive for you and you took him at 85 or whatever. I just like enough of the stuff that he does with route running. Like I said, there's inefficiencies in how he comes out of breaks. He's not quite quick enough, but like, he can create after the catch. I really believe that. I think he can make the plays up the ladder, jumping over people, getting the football at the high point. I think that UCF offense is a little different. It's going to need to be some refinement there, but I hope there's not too much overlap. That's right. It starts to get like Cedric Tillman overlap a little bit there, but if I'm saying I need a wide receiver, like I really want one here, maybe they move back, or even if they're at 85, I could see some teams really coveting him at 85 in that range. So I think Javon Baker is a good enough player that you could invest that pick in and feel really good about it. And if I was asking the scouting room if I believed in him, I would say yes. So that'll be a guy that I believe in.
I think one of the things that we've talked about so many wide receivers over the course of these first two shows, and one of the things that I've been thinking about recently, Jake, is like, do the Browns like the same types of wide receivers that draft guys do? Because so far the indications are no. But you also have to remember that they nailed Donovan Peoples-Jones in their first draft, and we all know, right on the doorstep of picking Nico Collins, and he went to the Texans one pick ahead. Now, you know, you can say whatever, woulda, coulda, shoulda, etc., right? But I believe that the Browns they're a little idiosyncratic with their wide receiver choices, but I think they're going to figure it out in this draft. And I'm very curious. You said it earlier, and it's really what made me think of it. They're going to pick one. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Probably with one of these first two picks. I'm very interested to see which player they choose, because I really think this is kind of the one where if they get it right, you can kind of forgive the Anthony Schwartz stuff, whatever Cedric Tillman has been so far, which I think has been disappointing. If they get it wrong, then you start to really ask some difficult questions about, can they evaluate the position in the draft? Because you'd be talking about three wide receiver picks missed in the past 4 years or whatever.
Right. At least not in the middle rounds. We'll see. Right. Maybe next year they're hungry to take a first round guy. But, you know, that's something that I think we have to mention too, because I've been guilty of this, Andrew, with like talking about defensive tackle investments. And it's like, you know, they've also been taking a lot of these guys rounds 4, 5, and 6. And it's like,
it's necessary context.
It's hard to nail those picks. They're so few and far between. We're looking at these guys who get second contracts. It's like not many of them are in those later rounds. Obviously, I mean, the talent is not always one for one there, but higher round picks are going to give you a better chance of meeting the threshold. So we just need the Browns to start getting first round picks again, because then we can get an even better feel. We have so much data on them rounds 3 through 7, so much, but we need more of the early stuff here. We're missing out on that because we're making, and this is like what we do on these pods. We talk about these things and make these assumptions about these guys as evaluators. And it's like, I've caught myself with that. It's a little tricky. It's a little tricky to be hard on them for some of these positions based on the opportunity. Now, free agency and stuff, that's fair, because that's a level playing field. But here, making choices on some tough positions in the middle rounds is always dicey, right?
It's a good reminder. It's a good reminder that nobody is batting 1,000, certainly not when you get into rounds 3, 4, et cetera.
Right.
It's a good reminder. I am very curious. I there's part of me, the cynical part of me, that thinks they're going to pick a guy, you know, at 54 or 85, and we're going to go, the fit there just doesn't make any sense, right? And then there's part of me that thinks that this is the year that it's like JOK was in 21, where it's like, yep, this makes perfect sense. And I'm curious to see which one it is.
I'm hoping it's the latter there, because
of course, we saw it last year.
Cedric Tillman, a lot of people like that pick who are draft study guys, liked him more than Hyatt, whatever, whatever. He's got a long way to go to prove that the love that he was given from some folks who are the deeper draft people. You know, Dane loved him. Like they lauded that pick. They liked it. Wasn't one that we were all eyeballing, right? Certainly wasn't one. Siaki Ika, we're still saying it. I didn't see it at the time. Nothing in the first year told us that it made any sense. So you give him credit, DeJuan Jones and some of these others, right? You know, Cam Mitchell, like these guys make sense. Whippler. But there's some early ones too that are making you scratch your head a little bit on the fit. Let's hope we have some good vibes. They stay in round two, and we have some good vibes around the player they pick there with a relatively premium borderline top 50 pick. And then they, you know, make a pick at 85 that tells us a story that we want to hear, because we want this stuff to mesh. We really want it to mesh and be able to explain it. I hate getting on pods after a draft pick and being like, I have no idea, guys. Doesn't make sense to me. Here's what the scout said, but it doesn't make sense to me. I hate that conversation. So let's hope that they don't put us in that Siaki Ika position again this year, because that was rough. So good stuff though. That's three players at 85. 156 will be a little tighter range, but we're skipping over a whole hell of a lot of players there. So these are going to get a little bit more abstract as we go into the later rounds here. Maybe we'll just do Andrew and I finding 6 guys in the 200s. You might need to have a guest on to do that, because that's a little dicey. We'll see what we can come up with for those picks. So anyway, thanks for joining, guys, and hanging out and listening to this show. We will try to get something up over the weekend. I've said it 2 straight weekends. Hasn't happened, but we're going to try. And you know, that's what life's all about, is giving it your best try. So we're going to try like hell. Appreciate you guys being here, hanging out. Rate and review the podcast if you can. Always appreciate that very, very much, guys. Spotify or Apple, however you go about it. Even if it's just a rating, you don't have to write anything. Just giving us whatever you think we deserve is always greatly appreciated. All right. Have a fantastic Friday, everybody. Be well. Go Browns.